Unforgettable.
Yo, this is George Dr. Funkenstein Clinton, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa.
This is an editorial statement from the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation Board of Directors. The current treatment of migrants and asylum seekers by our national government has reached the point of cruelty and human rights abuses. Daily, we hear the stories of families separated, children deprived of basic sanitation, and people locked in crowded spaces for weeks on end. This is an unacceptable way to treat anyone. We urge U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Health and Human Services to find a humane solution immediately at whatever the necessary cost. We urge our listeners to contact their congressperson and U.S. senators to voice their opposition and to donate to nonprofit organizations like the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, Kids in Need of Defense, and Freedom for Immigrants, who provide legal counsel and monitoring. We believe our country can and should be better than this.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we'll hear about some controversies around public education and the Florida legislature. Plus, I want to hear your thoughts about Friday night's guilty verdict in the Clearwater manslaughter trial of Michael Draca. Here's the number to call in. I won't be taking phone calls until about the middle of the show, but here's the number, 813-239-9663. You can always email your comments to dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Please put your name and where you're texting from there. We're going to begin this conversation about education, and this I'm going to play some tape from the Tampa Tiger Bay Club that happened about a week ago. And rather than play the entire one-hour discussion, I'm going to focus on four or five questions that struck a nerve with the audience or caused some disagreements among the panelists. That'll give us time in the second half of the show so that you can give us your opinions about the guilty verdict in the Draca trial. What could that mean for how juries interpret Florida's Stand Your Ground law? How does Pinellas Sheriff Bob Gualtieri's initial decision to not arrest Draca, how does that hold up? So that'll be later in the show, but first up is education. And the four panelists were at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club were outgoing Hillsborough County Schools Superintendent Jeff Eakins, Melissa Erickson, who is Executive Director of the Alliance for Public Schools, Stephanie Baxter Jenkins, Executive Director of the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association, and Tamara Schamberger, she's Chair of the Hillsborough School Board. And later this afternoon, I'm going to put video from the full meeting on our website so that you can watch that there at WMNF.org/news. Thanks to Blanny Whalen for help with that video. So here's the first question, and you can certainly call in and make your comments in between, and I'll play them. But the first question here has to do with the Florida legislature and whether they're making it harder for public education because of amounts of money that they have to share with charter schools.
Ron Weaver, thank you very much for coming. In putting the half cent on the ballot, you did it brilliantly and beautifully and quickly and dealt with an existing state law on the subject of how much had to be studied before it could go on the ballot. Did the Florida legislature try to close the door and make it harder for the next time we try to raise money courageously like that? And I love the way you put it. We can do anything if we set our minds to it. Is the Florida legislature making it harder next time to do the anything that's next in that sort of funding courage?
Well, I will tell you, when I believe it's been 19 or 20 school districts across the state of Florida have all gone to the ballot because of their capital needs or their operational needs, and they've all been successful. And so that tells me that when we hear this, the issue around my constituents don't support, you know, the issues, we just proved our constituents in Hillsborough County support education. You know, I think that's what we said. So we did see some legislation start to, in bills, come up in Tallahassee this year to kind of maybe push back a little bit at what's occurring, what's the success of the passage of those referendums. And so I know that right now, currently, there is one that is out there that's requiring the sharing of monies with charters, if that was an operational. As far as our capital referendum is concerned, we have not, legislation did not impact that. But that is going to be something I think we're going to have to watch carefully in the future.
So the answer is yes. I mean, if
the question is the legislature making it hard for public schools to exist, blah, 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 in any way, shape, or form? The answer is yes. I mean, the answer is yes. And I think that back to the opportunity thing, we have an opportunity right now, and actually, I believe, a responsibility to decide what kind of community we want to be and what kind of public funding we want for education. And so, you know, traditionally, public schools have been the most locally controlled entity within government, and the legislature would like to change that. And they'd like to say, you know what, you people at the local level, you pass a tax to support your schools, we're actually going to not allow you to spend the money the way you want to, and that's not okay. And so I think we have to continue to stand up when those things happen, and continue to hold our legislators accountable for the fact that when the people say something, the people mean what they say was on the ballot, not what the legislator thinks they wanted to have happen.
That was Melissa Erickson.
I was
Erickson.
Just, you know, this adding to what Melissa said, I do think we've heard from a number of legislators that they have been bothered by the amount of communities taking things into their own hands. And, you know, that is, again, the beauty of the democratic process. I do think here, as Melissa said, our communities proved we support our public schools and we're willing to do what it takes to make sure they are in good physical shape. And honestly, there's some opportunities in the future we might have to look at in terms of millage and other things. Many of our surrounding districts have multiple ways in which they support schools. This half penny we passed is limited to capital needs, which we absolutely needed and which benefit both students and certainly the people I represent, our teachers and support professionals. But lots of other places have done millages for to increase teacher salary, and we're now having that issue in terms of competition with area, you know, our other area districts.
So I agree with my panelists wholeheartedly. Our board, though, is determined. We're not going to let what's happening in Tallahassee really affect what we need to do here in Tampa and Hillsborough County with education. So we're going to continue to push forward. Our board has been very intentional about meeting with our legislators. We have a phenomenal Hillsborough delegation. And so we understand their perspective. But again, we encourage them to continue to put students first. And funding is an issue here in Hillsborough. And so we want to make sure that we continue to fight. We're now taking care of our capital improvement needs, but we have teachers that we need to take care of. We need teachers with better pay and better salaries, and so we will continue to do what we need to do here in Hillsborough to make sure that everyone is taken care of.
Well, that's Tamara Schamberger. She's chair of the Hillsborough County School Board, and she said something that turned out right there. She said something that turned out to be controversial during this meeting. She said that the Hillsborough legislative delegation was very supportive of public schools. So shortly we'll hear from one of her panelists who takes issue with that. Of course, the Hillsborough delegation is made up of Republicans and Democrats, and so there's some people who get into a disagreement with her about that later on, and I'll play that. You're listening to audio from Tampa Tiger Bay Club, a discussion about the Hillsborough education tax and about public schools in general. And there's a lot of criticism of the Florida legislature during this discussion, and you're going to hear some of that later on. You're also going to hear about unions and the rights of custodians, and also about public comment during meetings and whether or not that's televised. So these are all things that you're going to be hearing in the next few minutes. So stick with us. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. It's 12:14 in the afternoon. The next sound I'm going to play is about the legislature and its role in public schools. So here are the four panelists, and we're going to begin with Stephanie Baxter Jenkins. She is the executive director of the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association, and you're going to hear a little bit of the controversy here come out about whether the Hillsborough delegation of the legislature support public education. So here's the question and the comments from the four panelists.
Hi, I'm Gina Glessis. First, thank you for doing such a successful job in educating the community to get the tax levied. I think that was really critical. I think it's evident that what we need to do, everyone in this room, is change the legislators in Florida who will respect public education. So my question to you is, what can we do as a community since public education really is sort of being demonized? Can you give us suggestions? What would be the most helpful thing that we can do to help turn this around?
I mean, I think a number one thing you can do is talk to people and educate your neighbors. You know, it was amazing when we were talking to voters at the at voting sites about the referendum, how many people just weren't aware of the funding situation schools are put in. So I think education is key, not assuming that everyone knows what's happening. Reaching out to other parents, other community members, education and just letting people know the scenario is the biggest thing. But then also holding people accountable for how they vote in Tallahassee. I have heard a lot of our legislators say they support public schools, they support teachers. I mean, you rarely meet a person actually in life who says we hate teachers. I mean, I honestly don't, and yet I live in a state and have worked in a state now for 9 years where I think everything that happens is directly harming teachers, and I'm also a mom, and it's directly harming my kids. So I think educating the public about all of those things and then telling people to vote and to vote for people who will loudly and proudly support public education.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'll be very quick, and I'll kind of go off of what I said at the very beginning. So this community made a loud and clear statement. We support our public schools. And so nobody that is voted on or is elected in this community can ever say anything other than that. So, you know, I think that's the message we have to talk to our delegation. And we have a really supportive delegation here. We've had a meeting just recently that our school board met with our local delegation. And they have had some, they're talking about how do we raise teacher salaries? How do we do those kinds of things? But they're one delegation. So, but we have to keep talking to them, though. And we can't allow anyone to say, well, I don't think my constituents will support that. I'm sorry, your constituents just spoke out loud and clear, and they support public education. So no one can say that in this community. We just have to build off that momentum and keep educating people. I think that's the one thing I saw out. People wanted to know. And we just have to keep, me as superintendent, as the board, we just have to keep educating our community about the needs. And then I think the harnessing of the alignment between PTAs, our teachers, strong community partners, businesses in our community, I think are all on the same page and they want to get behind us.
So I have to disagree with Chair Schamberger, what she said later. Let's stop pretending we have a phenomenal delegation when it comes to supporting public schools. Like, let's stop pretending. Because
they are great.
I'm not a politician, so I'm not going to pretend that there are people who will tell me or will tell you or will even stand on the floor of the House or Senate and say these wonderful things about from the schoolhouse to the state house to the whatever, and then they vote directly in opposition to our public schools. So let's start calling them out, number one. If you need actual facts, I highly recommend you go to the Florida Policy Institute site and look at their budget analysis about how we are devaluing and underfunding our public schools so that you can refute. You know why we have record funding in education? Because we have a record number of students. More students, more money. Not more money per student, just more students and more money. Less money, more students. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Call them out. Don't let them, holding them accountable at the ballot box is one thing. Holding them accountable when they're in a room lying is what we have to do on a regular basis because they do it all the time.
That was Melissa Erickson. We're going to hear now from Tamara Schamberger from the school board.
Go ahead. Yeah, so, well, first of all, I'll disagree with that. I get what you're saying. Melissa and I get along very well, but our Hillsborough delegation has really worked well. The Hillsborough delegation, I want to be clear about that, has really worked well with the school board and the district in getting some things done. So even as an elected, I certainly won't bash them. But talking about bashing, I think one thing we can do is keep the conversation positive. We always focus on the negative, negative, negative. I think by having these meetings, having open dialogue with all of us, with the superintendent especially, educating ourselves on education and keeping the positive, the wonderful, great things that are going on in education in the forefront, we're really start to change how education is seen. We all too often just focus on the negative, and I think that has to shift.
Well, that's Tamara Schamberger, chair of the Hillsborough School Board, and she was disagreeing with Melissa Erickson, who's executive director of the Alliance for Public Schools. Both Tamara Schamberger and Jeff Eakins, the superintendent, said that the Hillsborough County legislative delegation were all supportive of public schools. Melissa Erickson, the executive director of the Alliance for Public Schools, took issue with that. I wonder what you think. The number is 813 833-239-9663. You're listening to a conversation about education and public education that was at Tampa Tiger Bay Club about a week ago. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:21 in the afternoon. And the next segment that I'm going to play to you, and by the way, I'm going to pause and say, just remember, in a few minutes, I'm going to open up the phone lines and we can talk about the Michael Drake guilty verdict in the Stand Your Ground ruling, the trial of Michael Drake that happened over the weekend. But right now we're talking about education, and I'm going to get into some more controversy right now, and that has to do with custodians. And will custodians be privatized in Hillsborough County? It's a story that we've been covering here at WMNF for a few months now, and the four panelists were asked about that. So let's hear the question, and we'll start with the first answer will be from Jeff Akins, the outgoing school superintendent.
Hi, my name is Barbara Tepke, and I'm a member of the Hillsborough Education Association, retired, and the NEA as well. I firmly believe in the right of employees to organize and collective bargain for pension and benefits and salaries. I had heard things about the custodians, and what is your position on supporting custodians, bus drivers, and cafeteria workers to stay as full-time employees of the school board and not be privatized?
So this is an area that, as we look at going back to the funding of public education, so in the state of Florida, in some ways, in public schools, you kind of are hindered on where you can go to look at any kind of cost savings. So for instance, we have, and it's a good thing, we have class size, which dictates a number of teachers that we have to have in the state of Florida, which we want lower class sizes. So that right there creates some budgetary challenges because of the amount of employees you are now working with to pay. So we want to make sure that they are provided the right pay. So the only way that you look at really finding other kinds of funds is you look at how you operate your school district. So one of the operational areas, other than transportation, is custodial services, food services, and those kinds of places in your organization. So one of the things that our board asked me as a superintendent to do is just look at those areas, and some of this information got a little bit probably going sideways, but it was really more about a focus on an overall look of the area of custodial services. How can we become more efficient in what we do? Are we meeting the national standard on being efficient in cleaning our buildings? How can we do it better? Is there other options out there? So that's what we were asked to do. And so there's different options we're looking at right now. One is we put out an RFP just to kind of get an idea of what that pricing looks like, because we've never even looked at that before. And then I've also worked with our HSEF union to create a centralization option, one that ultimately looks at how we use our own employees in our school district and how we centralize services and become more efficient in our own operations. So right now I have all those proposals in front of me. No decision has been made. It's just literally looking at every single option you have on the table to ultimately bring to the board a recommendation.
I feel like I have to just say, on behalf of the employees, we certainly we appreciate that we don't represent the employees at issue, but stand behind 100% their being here and being actual employees of the district. You can't go to a school in this district where somebody doesn't say it was the custodian or it was the food service worker that they made that connection with. They are incredibly important to our schools. I could go over lots of districts where they've tried to privatize these services and saw no savings. As a general rule, when you add an entity that has to make a 30% markup, you're not ultimately going to save money. So we certainly support the centralization option and looking at efficiencies in the school district, because we want those people to remain as committed employees here.
So I like to say that I also agree with that. And so while the board, the superintendent certainly has a duty to find ways to save our district money when we talk about shortfalls. And so I think it was necessary for him to do the RFP, but we of course love our employees. We certainly love our custodians especially. And so I personally have encouraged the superintendent to look at centralizing over the privatization. I think centralizing certainly protects our employees' status, but then it also addresses some of the issues that we face in our schools with cleanliness and things like that. And so while nothing has been brought to the board, I certainly support the centralization of our custodial services.
Carl Zelanka, maybe I hope I misread the article in the newspaper, but it seems that the solution to making some of our F schools better is to let somebody else do it. Why can't our school board do it?
So welcome to the world of legislation. Legislation was passed about 3 years ago, soon after I became superintendent, that looked at the accountability system in the state. And when schools, it used to be that schools that were graded F were schools that had to ultimately have other kinds of interventions. Now in the state of Florida, if the school is a D, and is a D more than a 1 year, it moves straight into those interventions. And one of those interventions that the state requires, you have, you know, 2 years to turn that school around. If not, there's only three options that is straight through legislation. One is close the school. Okay, well, we have to have school. All right. Two, you could turn it over to a charter company to run the school. Or three, you could partner with an external operator. Ultimately, and that external operator is not in charge of the school. The superintendent of the board is still in charge of the school. And they work, they have, you know, some background in turning around schools, and they work with the school districts in order to do that. And that's the option we've chosen. So all those schools, even though it says external operator, they are still under the direction of the school district. And that external operator, as required by law, is partnering with us to work with those schools.
I would say again, this is a scenario wholly created by the Florida legislature. This is again another manner in which we're going to try to get private entities taking over our schools, to have our school board have to give money to someone else outside the district to do something we could do inside. Now, there's no doubt we have to address what's happening at schools that are failing. But there's nothing that any of these people are going to do that isn't something we could try locally. This is basically a forced manner of privatization and very consistent with what the Florida legislature has done in the last 15 years. So again, I think you have to look carefully at all of the things that happen in Tallahassee every year, because I've been in Florida 9 years now, and every year there has been something that, again, is pushing that privatization mode, is pushing what Melissa said, the long-term plan to have no public schools.
So I'm going to be really blunt again and answer your question as it was asked. Why? Because it fast-tracks privatization. That's why. There's no reason for it except for that. It doesn't help teachers, it doesn't help students, it doesn't help the system. It fast tracks privatization. And so when you look at the fact that roughly $300,000 at Foster Elementary last year was spent on an outside operator, where if we took that $300,000 and put it into a community schools model that would actually assess the needs at that school and have some resources to meet those needs as identified by teachers and students and parents, we actually could have had turnaround, and instead we had to pay that to an outside operator to walk the halls and tell teachers what to do and create an app that does professional development, all things that the district could have done on its own and probably had one meeting with them. If you look at the outside operator that the district has just chosen, they weren't even allowed to choose their own outside operator. They were told no for who they wanted to, and they had to go to someone else. And that outside operator is owned by a former politician from the Tampa Bay area. And so that's why we can't turn around schools on our own, because nobody makes money off it.
That was Melissa Erickson. This is Tamara Schoenberger.
So I definitely agree with Melissa there. And so we certainly don't like it. We think we could do better. And so, but as the superintendent said, this is something that's required by law. And so the simple answer is to not have our schools put in that situation where they can't be taken over by an external operator. That's the challenge that we give the superintendent to close that achievement gap. Every school in the district deserves to be an A school, and we would eliminate that problem. But as we just discussed, there's just some issues outside of our control, some struggles that we continue to deal with that continue to allow these schools to be low performing. But something else, you know, the board has done is task the superintendent with thinking outside of the box. Let's think about some other ways that we could beat the system so that we don't have to deal with these external operators, that we can be more proactive in closing this achievement gap, whether it's creating some type of internal district charter or something like that. But we really have to kind of get ahead of the system, start thinking outside of the box. But our first priority is to raise the achievement of all schools so it becomes a non-issue in our district and we beat the whole game to try to privatize education.
Well, that's Tamara Schamberger, chair of the Hillsborough County School Board. And you also heard before her Melissa Erickson, the executive director of Alliance for Public Schools. You heard outgoing Hillsborough School Superintendent Jeff Eakins and Stephanie Baxter Jenkins, the executive director of the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association. We're having a discussion here about education and about public education and possibly being privatized. So there was a lot of talk there about privatization. Also before that about possibly privatizing the custodial staff. And you heard an update there from both the superintendent and from a school board member, the school board chair, and from the union, of course. If you'd like to comment on any of this, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, WMNF.org. It's 12:31 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. In just a couple of minutes, I'm going to go to the phone lines and we'll switch gears a little bit. We'll talk about education if you like, of course, but we'll also, I want you to weigh in on the guilty verdict in the trial of Michael Draca. What are your thoughts? Now might be a good time for you to call if you want to get in the queue, 813-239-9663. You could also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You could text 813-433-0885. We did get a text already. Bubba says, step up for students. So that's from Bubba. Thank you for that text. And right now we're going to hear about public comment during the school board meetings. And public comment isn't televised right now, and that's a very controversial, and you're going to hear, I don't know if I'd use the word argument, but a disagreement between the school board member Tamara Schamberger and Stephanie Baxter Jenkins, who is executive director of the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association. So I'm going to play that tape in just a second, but I do want to remind you that I want to know, what do you think about the Michael Draca decision? What could it mean for how juries interpret Florida's stand your ground law? Do you have an opinion about that? And what do you think about how Pinellas Sheriff Bob Galtieri's initial decision to not arrest Draca is holding up now that he's been found guilty? 813-239-9663. Well, back to this discussion about education and about public comment not being aired, not being televised live during school board meetings.
Richard Stein, this question is directed to the chair. It's my understanding that on those sessions dealing with the expenditure of this tax money that we imposed, that it's been ruled that during a public comments section that would not be allowed to be recorded. Why is that so?
Well, thank you for the question. So our public comments are recorded. The public comments just are not televised. And so that was a decision made by the board and the district, as we have a duty to control the decorum of our meetings. And so it was really time for us to shift how we do our entire meetings. It wasn't just public comment. It was the setup of the entire school board meeting. And so, there's this narrative that there's no transparency. Well, the opposite of transparency is obscurity, right? And so to say that we're obscure in our dealings is absolutely incorrect. All of our meetings are public. They're always open to the public, whether it's public comment, our school board meetings, our workshops. Anytime the board is convened, it's always public. And all of these meetings are always recorded. Anyone has access to the audio recordings of these meetings. But we certainly take our public comment very, very seriously. They're intended for the public to give us board members input on items that are being voted on. Oftentimes, with great input, it will really influence our votes. And so we take our public comments very, very seriously. And so with this new change, what we have seen is now things are really working better. We're really getting that great input, and we're getting the feedback that we need. But nothing is closed off. Our doors are open, and everything is recorded.
On this one, I think I do understand why the board looked at doing some things to change their meeting and to bring efficiencies. I absolutely see that. And as somebody who goes to the board meetings, you can always attend. I do have to respectfully disagree with Chair Schamberger that not televising those public comments is a good way to go. And I say that only because it is, you know, I absolutely, again, I am at some of those meetings. I see some of the things that probably bring people to think you don't want to televise it. I mean, I've absolutely seen it. At the same time, democracy sometimes is messy. And I think the public needs to see what other people are saying, because that also then tells you how they were impacted by a vote. But again, she's absolutely right. If you want to see things, you can always see them. You can always get the transcripts.
So let me just say this really quick. So one thing we like, even for you, oftentimes you'll come to board meetings, you'll speak publicly.
Yep.
Maybe you want the public to see it, and that's great. But what we like as the board is for you not to just come to board meetings to speak with us, but to reach out to us outside of the board meetings to talk about some deep issues, meet with us. But you've chosen to only do it during public comment. And so that makes us think, are you really wanting to engage with us? Are you doing it for the television cameras? We don't want that. We want you to really work with us and come and talk to us about issues that are, that's affecting the teachers. And so we haven't seen that, but we're hoping that by changing this format, that that will change.
Well, that was Tamara Schamberger, the chair of the Hillsborough School Board. And earlier we heard Stephanie Baxter Jenkins, the executive director of the Hillsborough Classroom Teachers Association, and they were part of a four-person panel that also included outgoing Hillsborough County Schools Superintendent Jeff Eakins and Melissa Erickson, the executive director of Alliance for Public Schools. They were all speaking on a panel about a week ago at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club. The next Tampa Tiger Bay Club is September 27th at the Cuban Club in Ybor City. John Morgan is talking about the minimum wage and talking about marijuana and probably a lot of other things. But thank you for listening to that part. And I think that there's one person who wants to talk about education before we switch subjects here. So I'm going to go to the phones right now and talk to John in Port Richey. Is that right? You want to talk about education?
Yeah. Thanks for the show there, Sean. One of the board members said that they were, when they were talking about the cost of the custodial staff, they're looking at all options, making it more efficient and that sort of stuff. And I'm all for good stewardship of the public dollar. But he did not mention all options, because there's another option besides just cutting costs, is raising costs or raising revenue. And there's something that I would think that, you know, that really bothers me, goes back to the last show, that we passed an amendment to create the lottery to help the educational system, but the state government turned that around again. So what I would do is I would go back and say, okay, whatever we're paying what per student right now by the state, maybe add 10% to that or something. And that would be a cost that would be indexed to inflation that would come out of the general revenue. The money from the lottery would go into a trust fund, not the general revenue, that was specifically to be added to the educational system. So that way it's not replacing the money as they're doing now. And if that's not enough money, then you could take the state sales tax of 6% and raise it to like 6.25% or maybe 6.5%. Put that in a trust fund strictly for the educational system. But I agree with a lot of those people. The state doesn't want to do this. The state wants to go to privatization, so they don't want to do things that would shore up the educational system. All right. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for that comment, John, and thanks for wrapping up for this segment of the show to talking about education. Of course, if you have something you'd like to say about education, we'll still talk to you. We'll still hear, take your calls, but I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to weigh in on this, that you have an opinion about this and that you'd like to call in about this next topic, and the number to call in is 813-239-9663. I'll get to the two people on the line right now, and I'll get to your phone call if you call in right now as well. Let me just read the first few paragraphs from the Associated Press story about, they start out, a white Florida man who told detectives he had a pet peeve about illegal parking in handicapped spots was convicted late Friday of manslaughter for the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man outside a convenience store. Six jurors deliberated for 6 hours in Clearwater before convicting Michael Draca for the July 19th, 2018 death of Marquias McLaughlin. Draca, who could get 30 years, looked down after the verdict was read and then wiped his brow. The verdict came about a half hour after jurors sent out a note saying they were confused by the state's self-defense law. Circuit Judge Joseph Boulogne told them all he could do is reread it for them. The lengthy statute generally says a shooting is justified if a reasonable person under those circumstances would believe they are in danger of death or great bodily harm, but it also says the shooter could not have instigated the altercation. The AP article goes on to say that Drake's attorneys are likely to file an appeal, that the video was played multiple times for the jury of five men and a woman. And we should note here that none of the jurors were black. And the prosecutor called Draca a parking lot vigilante. I'm sure you have thoughts about this. He was found guilty of manslaughter. Of course, there's going to be an appeal. But the two main questions I have for you is, what do you think this does? What does this tell you about how juries in Florida might interpret Florida's stand your ground law? That's my first question. And the second is Sheriff Gualtieri, very famous statewide, especially because of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas panel that he's chairing, and a lot of the changes that his panel, maybe read him, are proposing, are becoming policy. Let's say the arming teachers, or giving teachers the ability to be armed in school. When his mind changed, all of a sudden, now that's part of Florida policy. So he initially did not have Draca arrested. And what do you think about that, especially in light now of the guilty verdict? The number to call in, 813-239-9663. It's 12:41 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, 88.5 FM. I'm Sean Canaan, and we have Clifford in Tampa, who's been holding a while. Hi, Clifford. What would you like to say?
Hey, that verdict was okay, but he actually murdered that man. And he actually appointed himself as the parking lot monitor, and he wasn't even he didn't even have a problem with it because he wasn't handicapped, and he was looking for somebody to shoot. So I think the verdict should have been first degree murder. He provoked that guy into pushing him down because he was messing with his old lady there and giving her a hard time, and he appointed him to be the patrol out there for that. And what kind of a right did he have even to mention that to the person that was parked there? A lot of times them convenience stores are over packed, and that's the only place you can park sometimes.
And I didn't read one part of the article that it pointed out that Draca said that he always carries his gun. He has a concealed weapons permit. So I don't know. What does that make you think about interacting with people in public? If there are people out there who are always carrying around their gun, presumably kind of just looking for trouble almost. I mean, I don't want to make too big of a deal out of what happened, but he had done a very similar confrontation in the same parking lot weeks or months earlier.
Sean, it looked like to me that he was just looking for somebody to shoot because he had this permit and he was all illegal. He had stand ground, all this. But he provoked that guy into pushing him down. So actually, you know, he should have been convicted for first degree murder because the guy backed off from him after he pushed him down. But Jesus, he was messing with his old lady. Wasn't he standing his ground too, without a gun?
All right. Well, thanks for getting this part of the conversation kicked off. I appreciate it, Clifford.
All right. Thank you, Sean. You got a good show. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Thanks so much for listening, and I really appreciate people who call in. And I'm looking at the phones, and most of the people who are calling in right now are males. I would really, really appreciate a female perspective on this, if you have any other unique perspective, rather than you just read the newspaper or whatever. I'd really like to hear from you if you have a unique perspective, especially I'd like to hear from women. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. Rich in Largo, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hey, there's too many guns. Just too many people. They think that stand your ground is giving whatever their prime target to do what they want. You know, and it's just as simple as that. I have a gun. I can shoot you if I feel threatened.
Do you think that this verdict slightly alters that equation?
He was found guilty. I'm glad to see that, if you know what I mean. It's in between and in between. He was found guilty. Hopefully, he's going to jail for a while. I don't know.
All right, Rich, any other thoughts before I move on?
No, just there's too many guns.
All right.
I have guns, but I don't even know where they are.
Well, that's not a great thing either. You might want to lock them up somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in if you would like to get in the queue. Alan, I will get to you, I promise, but I'm going to put these a woman or two before you. I hope that you're cool with that. Noreen from Valrico, thanks so much for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hi, Sean.
Hi.
I wanted to say that isn't it something that a white man, it's okay for them to protect their family, but when it's a black man protecting their family, it's not okay.
What do you mean? I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I'm pretty sure I know where you're going, but can you think of an example where a white man was protecting his family and got off scot-free?
If that was a white family in that car, and the white man came out and saw someone yelling at his wife, and he pushed him down, this wouldn't even been a case. He would have been arrested and charged. But because it was a black man, he's not supposed to protect his black wife.
How do you think that it holds up, the fact that Galtieri and his office did not charge Draco?
He should be fired. I said it the first time I saw it, he should have been, he's a racist pig and he should be fired. I'm a black woman and I have sons. And
Noreen, are you still there?
Yes, I am. It's just sad. It's sad that, you know, our men can be murdered for protecting us, but when it's a white woman, they should be protected. It's just unfair. It's unfair. You have this lady with these babies that they have no father. And he just made a announcement like it was nothing. And he's supposed to be protecting the public. It's sad.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate that perspective. Thank you for calling in. Thanks, Noreen. 813-239-9663. If you agree with any of the callers or if you disagree or if there's something that hasn't been said about this that you'd like to weigh in on, please give us a call. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. The next caller we're going to go to has been holding a while. Alan in Tampa, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say that, for one thing, thanks for all you do. I think that I'd like to think that this was not a racially motivated case. I hope not, and I'm glad that the jury found him guilty. I always felt he was guilty, and the fact that it's an all-white jury that convicted him, I think at least takes away some of the racial overtones of the case. The case itself, I think it's pretty clear. I was disappointed that this guy was not arrested immediately. I think if there had been a better investigation early on, and I do respect the sheriff, because I've been, you know, following the news for a long time, I do respect him for past performances, but I think in this case, they overlooked the fact that this guy has been in these altercations before, he's been in altercations in that specific place before, and actually threatened to shoot somebody before about this parking spot. I think Draker is getting what he deserves. I hope he goes to jail for a long time. But I wish that the sheriff had investigated him further before deciding not to arrest him. That is disappointing. I don't think it was racially motivated. I hope not. I don't think so. But I think that the sheriff should learn from this that there was a more extensive investigation needed because this guy is crazy. You know, so I hope he gets sentenced to jail and stays there for a while. I think he did murder this guy. He was out looking to shoot somebody. I also have a weapon, but what I was trained was you remove yourself from a heated situation as best you can. And this McLaughlin gentleman, he was backing up. I mean, it's pretty clear. So thanks for hearing me out.
All right, Alan, thanks so much for calling in. I want to remind people that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, and we're having a discussion about the Stand Your Ground law, about the recent guilty verdict in the Michael Draca trial, and what your thoughts are. And, you know, I think that part of what Alan was getting at is that the Stand Your Ground law is really confusing, when to arrest someone and when to not arrest someone. And perhaps that's what the Pinellas sheriff was going through. And it turns out that he made the decision early on in that in that decision-making process to not arrest someone who is later found guilty of manslaughter. So, you know, maybe the sheriffs of this state need more guidance about the stand your ground law and when it applies and when it doesn't apply. And part of that is, you know, I'm not asking the legislature necessarily to do that. I think the public should be weighing in on, you know, maybe where the boundaries should be. That's not how the law works necessarily, but you know what I'm getting at. We should have a discussion about this. Well, the area code 239 writes in, glad Draco was found guilty, should have been for second degree murder there, though, is what that person says. Well, I have a lot of emails in advance. I apologize if I don't get to the emails. We have about 10 minutes left in the show and they're lining up. I will respond after the show if I don't get to you, but I do want to take some of these phone calls to free up some lines so that other people can call in as well. So Sherry in Dunedin, what would you like to say? Thanks for calling.
Well, first of all, it was just an unfortunate situation all the way around. The other caller was right. This guy has had altercations with other people. That definitely brought things into perspective when they're convicting them. My problem that I had was that it somebody chose to make it physical. I understand when someone's, you know, verbally confronting a family member, you know, and I get it. That can really, you know, enrage anybody. But I'm not sure that it should have went to the level of him coming right out and instead of just saying to the guy, you know, get away from my wife, you're dealing with me now, things like that. He bears a little bit of responsibility, you know, in the fact that he just came right out and chose to go right to the physical. It would have been, in a perfect world, a perfect scenario, it would have been best that he came out and just spoke words. But the fact that sometimes people are blinded to the fact that their kids are there, their kids are seeing all this. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, it was bad on both ends. I think that he definitely got what he deserved. The shooter got the sentence he deserved because he's had the issue before and he just seems like a real hothead. But in the same sense, the victim bears a little bit of responsibility in taking it to a physical level right off the bat. He knew his son was with him. So he didn't think the guy had a gun, so he took the chance and he decided to shove him. Well, when you decide to make it physical, you've now lost your life in the commission of a crime itself. It wasn't right that he got shot and killed. He was walking away. If he drew the gun and the guy was walking away, it should have stopped at that. He pulled the trigger at the wrong time, way after the fact. You know what I'm saying? Like he had plenty of time to make a decision to not do it. And, you know, both sides bear responsibility, one side more than others. But the fact that the victim decided to make it physical, I feel badly for his son. And I hope his son looks maybe at the situation and says, justice was served. But in the future, I'll use words a little bit more than just going right to the physical. And I think everybody should stop being so violent and physical and making that the first thing that you do. Not everybody does it, but in this situation, you know, it really made the situation worse. I think the shooter got what he deserved.
All right, Sherry, thank you.
In the same situation, the victim bears a little bit of responsibility, and I feel bad for the victim and his family. I really do.
All right, thank you for those thoughts, Sherry. I appreciate you calling in and saying that. Karen, in St. Petersburg, what would you like to add to the conversation today?
Well, you know, as an observer and someone who meditates, and then, you know, these things come at me, and you know, some things are heavier, and I lift them up and look to have a heart of, you know, a pure heart, and one of justice and pray for justice, is that, you know, people are for helping and not for hurting, and it does hurt, but, you know, he created it. He attracted it to himself, and, you know, he shot and killed the other man, and it's too bad that he couldn't use, you know, his own body, his words, you know, and communicate first. I mean, you know, we learned this is the way we should communicate to each other, not to just go to harm and injure someone, because, you know, he hurt himself, and then that's what he did. He ended up hurting himself, and, you know, I understand that, you know, you can stay innocent until proven guilty, so I can understand maybe why he wasn't arrested right off the bat, but, you know, he attracted to himself what he wanted to create as a creator, as a person. He did that, bring that to himself, you know, purchased the gun, wanted, you know, so I believe in his mental, in his heart, he helped create that whole scenario. He helped bring it to that point. And it's sad that, you know, that other lives were affected in a way that, you know, could have been a lot healthier and happier for many people, but he chose not to. So he has to be responsible for what he chose to do. And you know, that's part of what we learn. We learn to be responsible for our choices. And if it comes up and it's not a right choice, that people are strong enough in their hearts to make the right decisions. Thank you.
All right, Karen, thanks so much for calling in. Thanks for calling from St. Petersburg. I appreciate your perspective. I want to go to DeAndre in Riverview after I remind people that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. We're having a discussion about the guilty verdict in the Michael Draca trial. And DeAndre, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think everybody pretty much, a lot of people anyway, kind of respected my sentiment. But my attention is on the state prosecutor or the state attorney who brought the case up or revisited the case following Chair Gualtieri's decision of Daniel Brown. And whoever that was part of the court proceedings, who spoke on behalf of the family, in the interview following, he said that it wasn't a black or white thing. And this is in an interview, a brief interview. And I'm just curious. I'm not certain it's not a black or white thing, like the law itself, the standing ground law and the attitude is brought forth of people on, you know, society. But I'm curious, like, who elected him? Who brought him into office? I don't know. That kind of stands out to me because I'm not certain it's not a black or white thing. Black versus white thing. So that's just my thoughts. Though he did a great job, I think, advocating for the family and counsel or whatever in the court. I'm just curious who elected him or who brought him into the office as a state prosecutor or a state examiner or whatever.
And you're throwing that out there in case people know, because I don't happen to know the answer off the top of my head, and but
yes, so yeah, if someone knows that, it was just an interesting interview of his for me that stands out for the case. But yeah, that's all. I'm just curious to know more about him. I forgot his name too. So
all right, thanks.
Thank you.
We'll look into that, DeAndre. I appreciate that. And you know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, it shouldn't have been manslaughter. It should have been second-degree murder or something like that. And I just wonder, like, what if second-degree murder had been the charge, and then because it was that charge and not manslaughter, then it wouldn't have been a guilty verdict. Then we'd be in a completely different situation right now. So, you know, there's a lot of second-guessing that could happen. So, you know, who knows what to say. All right, Joan, in Florida, of all places, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hi, Joan, I want to share with you that just like the last caller, gun issues suddenly become political and then bipartisan. And what's kind of neat to remember, the core value is that the amendment rights are a right. So in America, being that we're a free country, somebody might say, well, you don't need a gun, or what would you need a gun for? But, you know, you can purchase a Hummer, and somebody could say to you, what do you need a Hummer for? You don't need that. But being that America is free, the amendment rights are a constitutional right. As an American, I can buy and own whatever I want as one of my freedoms. I don't have to justify to you whether I buy a Corvette that goes 120 miles an hour and our speed limit might only be 75.
Joan, we're running out of time, and I just want to maybe see if you can make your point in a couple of seconds. And I don't think anyone's saying that the right to have a gun is the problem. I think it was how his actions and how he used the gun. Can you wrap it up really quickly, please?
There's going to be violence whether you have rocks, knives, or guns. Just how people are.
All right. Thank you, Joan. You have a good day, too. And I want to thank everyone who called in and emailed and texted. And I promise I will get to your text after the show. If you would like to leave a voicemail, if you didn't get on the air and you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show in 2 weeks. And if you missed any of the show or you want to watch the video of the education forum, WMNF.org/news. Thanks to Frank Knox. Coming up next is Latino 54. Your hero, Mark Bureau, is tomorrow. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.